Trend number two, the Great American Political Chasm. The world Americans inhabit in 2020 is light years away from the one we knew as recently as 1990. Increasingly, Americans believe that those in the other party are not only misguided, but are also bad people whose views are so dangerously wrong-headed and crazy as to be all but incomprehensible. American Enterprise Institute President Arthur Brooks calls this a new culture of contempt in American politics and public life. How did we get here? Writing recently in the American Interest, David Blankenhorn teed up a list of 15 factors and how they contributed. Let's consider each one. Factor 1. The end of the Cold War. The West's victory in the Cold War means that, with the possible exception of jihadi terrorism, there is no longer a global enemy to keep us united in fighting a powerful and cohesive external threat. Factor 2. The rise of identity group politics. On both the left and the right, the main conceptual frameworks have largely shifted in focus from unifying values to group identities. As Amy Chua put it in her 2018 book, Political Tribes, the left believes that right-wing tribalism, bigotry, racism, is tearing the country apart. The right believes that left-wing tribalism, identity politics, political correctness, is tearing the country apart. They are both right. This is undeniably true, even though Chua's usage of the terms tribe and tribal may be problematic. Factor 3, growing religious diversity. As discussed in prior trends issues, current trends in American religion reflect as well as contribute to political polarization. One trend is growing secularization and a rising number of religiously unaffiliated Americans. As highlighted in the October 2019 trends issue, religiously unaffiliated voters, called nuns, are now more numerous than Catholics, evangelical Protestants, mainline Protestants, or members of historically black Protestant traditions, among Democrats and Democrat-leaning U.S. adults. Meanwhile, socially and theologically conservative Christians are now overwhelmingly Republican. Factor 4, growing racial and ethnic diversity. In the long run, increased racial and ethnic diversity is likely a strength. But in the short run, which means now, it contributes to the rise in social and political conflict and a decline in social trust, which is the belief that we can understand and count on one another. Factor 5, the passing of the greatest generation. We don't call them the greatest for nothing. Their generational values, forged in the trials of the Great Depression and World War II, included a willingness to sacrifice for country, concern for the general welfare, a mature character structure, and adherence to a shared civic faith. This dominant ethos reduced social and political polarization in the decades from 1940 to 1990. Factor 6, geographical sorting. Americans today are increasingly living in politically like-minded communities. Living only or mainly with like-minded neighbors makes us both more extreme and more certain in our political beliefs. As Bill Bishop and Robert Cushing put it in their 2008 book, The Big Sort, mixed company moderates, like-minded company polarizes. Heterogeneous communities restrain group excesses. Homogeneous communities march toward the extremes. Consider this. In 1976, 25% of U.S. voters lived in counties in which presidential candidates Ford or Carter won by a landslide margin of 20% or more of the vote. In 2016, that number was 60%. Factor 7, Political Party Sorting. Once upon a time, there were such creatures as liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats. No longer. The parties have sorted philosophically such that today, almost all liberals are Democrats and all conservatives are Republicans. One main result is that the partisan gap between the parties is wide and getting wider. Across 10 measures that the Pew Research Center has tracked on the same survey since 1994, the average partisan gap has increased from 15 percentage points to 36 points. Factor 8. New rules for Congress. The weakening and, in some cases, elimination of regular order have contributed dramatically to less trust and more animosity in the Congress, thus increasing polarization. This change involved abandoning and ignoring the rules, customs, and precedents intended to promote orderly and deliberative policymaking, as well as the erosion of traditions such as senatorial courtesy and social fraternization across party lines. Factor 9. New rules for political parties. Shifting the power of nomination from delegates to primaries, dismantling political machines, replacing closed-door politics with televised politics, and shrinking the influence of career politicians was all intended to democratize the system. The many so-called reforms in how we nominate, elect, and guide our political leaders replace the middlemen who help keep the system together instead of a political free-for-all in which the loudest and most extreme voices are heard above all others. Factor 10. New political donors. In earlier eras, money in American politics tended to focus on candidates and parties, while money from today's super-rich donors tends to focus on ideas and ideology. This shift to well-funded issue advocacy tends to advance polarization. Factor 11. New political districts. Widespread gerrymandering, defined as manipulating district boundaries for political advantage, contributes significantly to polarization because it makes candidates in gerrymandered districts worry more about being primaried by a more extreme member of their own party than about losing the general election. More than any other single factor, this fear drove the 2019 impeachment effort in the House. Factor 12. The spread of media ghettos. The main features of the old analog media include editing, fact-checking, professionalization, and the privileged status of institutions over individuals. These served as a credentialing system for American political expression. The distinguishing feature of the new digital media is the fact that anyone can publish anything that attracts views and clicks. The result has been replacing that old system with a non-system that is atomized and largely leaderless. Factor 13. The decline of journalistic responsibility. The dismantling of the old media has been accompanied by and has probably helped cause a decline in journalistic standards. These so-called journalists will accept poor quality in pursuit of volume and repetition, as well as the blurring and even erasure of boundaries between news and opinion, facts and non-facts, and journalism and entertainment. These losses feed polarization. Factor 14. The escalating perception of economic unfairness manifests in the form of income and wealth inequality. This perception is at the heart of rank-and-file bitterness. Until the late 90s, the social contract of the New Deal made all Americans steadily more affluent and happier. Then, the disruptive power of globalization, infotech, low productivity growth, and global migration exacerbated long-standing differences based on factors such as location, education, race, and age. This prompted various constituencies to formulate an array of simplistic explanations ranging from racism and sexism to the fundamental nature of the modern American welfare state, to excessive regulation, to excessive immigration, to free trade, to corporate greed. Yet, as trans readers know, these are at best partial explanations of the crisis tearing our country apart. So, where does that leave us? In reality, this impasse is the result of these 14 poorly addressed causes interacting with each other and feeding the most important and direct cause of the current polarization crisis. Factor 15, societal normalization of 9 cognitive biases. Over the past 25 to 30 years, the foregoing 14 factors have exacerbated a set of cognitive biases which have plagued mankind throughout history, but only come to dominate our public discourse at key inflection points, such as the American Revolution, the American Civil War, and today. These irrational ways of thinking constitute the actual foundation of polarization and lead to the direct and immediate cause of holding exaggerated and stereotyped views of each other, treating our political opponents as enemies, exhibiting growing rancor and aggression in public life, and acting as if common ground does not exist. What's the bottom line? First, some of these factors are ones that we either can't do much about or wouldn't want to, even if we could. Second, polarization is an explosive byproduct of these combined factors. Even those factors coming closest to intentionally polarizing, such as gerrymandering, reflect other and more fundamental intentions, such as winning elections, advancing a political agenda, or gaining clicks or viewers. Third, none of the first 14 causes directly perpetuate polarization. They have shaped an environment that incentivizes polarization, but they are not what polarizes. And fourth, cognitive biases are a normal part of human psychology, and they are difficult to overcome in the short term. Irrationality will drive important decisions around us, but that doesn't mean we have to act irrationally as individuals. Given this trend, we offer the following forecast for your consideration. First, while smart decision makers will harness intellectual humility to see beyond the cloud of war created by our cognitive biases, American society will be forced to fight a second civil war for the future of the country. David Blankenhorn argues that without dialogue based on reason-giving, openness to other views, rational argument in the service of truth, and norms of forbearance, civility, and self-restraint, democracy itself is poisoned and can grind to a halt. Furthermore, he admits that our capacity for these qualities, collectively called intellectual humility, depends on a surrounding culture that prizes it, expects it, institutionalizes it, and teaches it, especially to the young. He goes on to say that a number of societal conditions are needed to cultivate intellectual humility, including 1. Knowing conceptually what intellectual humility is and how to recognize it in others. 2. Participating in institutions that value openness and flexibility and that tolerate and often welcome uncertainty. 3. Receiving environmental feedback that permits us to understand accurately what we do and what we do not know. 4. Being exposed to the benefits of intellectual humility, such as improved decision-making, better relationships with others, and enhanced organizational and social progress. And 5. Being exposed to societal leaders who model intellectual humility, are admired by others because of it, and whose success is, in part, attributed to it. The trends editors argue that those societal conditions are absent in today's America, meaning that open confrontation is the only likely path to resolution. Second, like those of 1864 and 1936, the U.S. election of 2020 will be pivotal. In 1860 and 1932, America started down new paths after being at loggerheads for a decade or more. In 2016, we saw the same pattern. In each case, the question voters faced 4 years later was whether to abandon this painful but promising new course or continue. In the prior cases, Americans chose to stick with the new paradigm. Will this also be true in 2020? We believe so. Third, just as with the American Revolution and the American Civil War, the extreme polarization will only disappear once a new national paradigm is victorious. Even with its Great Society upgrades, the New Deal social contract does not meet the needs of 21st century Americans. And, in much the same way, the post-war international system needs to be revised. As explained in the January 2019 and February 2019 issue of Trends, the United States must choose between two irreconcilable visions of its future, which we've labeled the MAGA agenda and the Green New Deal. This war is being fought in boardrooms, Congress, the courts, and the media. Fourth, to ensure the political victory of the MAGA agenda, the administration has pre-positioned multiple economic initiatives to lift the economy in and around the time of the 2020 U.S. elections. The Federal Reserve has already eased monetary policy by 75 basis points to encourage housing and capital spending. Ever looser regulations are invigorating the North American energy revolution and the reshoring of American manufacturing. Tighter immigration policies are keeping American unemployment low and driving up wages, especially in the bottom three quintiles. Higher wages are driving a rise in domestic consumption. Global inflation remains low due to rising productivity and low energy prices. Work requirements on entitlements are helping increase the workforce participation rate and reduce reliance on government programs. And most importantly, the trade war with China will be temporarily resolved by an agreement that will survive until at least mid-2021. This is a recipe for happy workers, confident consumers, and soaring stock indexes. Fifth, between 2020 and 2024, external threats from China and Russia will begin bringing Americans together again. Suddenly, a resurgent Russia and belligerent China are challenging the United States in ways not seen since the 1980s. As explained in previous issues, both proactive accommodation and intentional regime change are likely to lead to catastrophe. Therefore, a combination of engagement and containment makes the most sense. In such a world, Americans will be more willing to look upon other Americans across the political spectrum as friends. And sixth, by 2030, we will be well into the golden age of the fifth techno-economic revolution. All American citizens will share in the resulting affluence, and much of today's animosity will subside. Admittedly, some grievances related to race, gender, and religion will persist, but many of the sore points related to income and wealth will vanish. The culture wars will be largely resolved by devolving more decisions to the states. And the hostilities we see today will begin to disappear into the rearview mirror as a new American social contract is widely accepted.